Into the Weird, episode 26, Drunken Tea Party.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my partner, Herman the Heretic Lowe. How are you, buddy?
I'm fine, thanks, Billy, man. I'm glad to be back again, you know, you and me doing Into the Weird, always a pleasure and a highlight of my week or my month or whenever we get to it. But, you know, like we mentioned last time, we're going to try to do it more regularly. We were derailed a little bit because of my winter vacation, because as the listeners know, I'm based in Taiwan, Taipei, and the Chinese New Year vacation got underway. And over on your side, there's been, you know, basically weather from the planet Hoth.
Oh, my gosh.
Speak
and
on
and
that.
More on the way. Yay,
what?
More on the way.
Seriously? Dude, oh, what's happening? Yeah. It's like,
never gonna end.
I think we mentioned this in an earlier episode, but it's like someone opened the casket of ancient winters, and there's just this curse on the entire northern hemisphere at the moment. It's devastating. So
it's ridiculous.
I'm sorry about that, man. I've seen the pics you've been posting about shoveling snow, or you know your day's work ahead of you to get that snow out of the way so that you can just leave for work. It's crazy.
The worst. And then you have those crazy Canucks up there in Canada. They just laugh at this and they're like, huh, you know, we get three times out of mountain, you know, a week.
They're acting like this is all normal. Well, it is normal for them, right? But I mean, if it's not something you're used to and you have to make a massive change to your everyday routine, you know, just to shovel snow and stuff, then of course that's going to be, you know, putting you off for the entire day. So, I hope this isn't the new normal because, you know, this is crazy. I can't imagine you guys have to keep doing this year after year. Crazy snowfall, man. But, you know, over here, it's just been raining a lot. So, you know, that's also not unusual, but it's been like weeks and weeks of you know, continuous downpour, and that's kind of hell. So, you know, I'm not going to complain, though, because you guys have it much worse at the moment. Still, you know, it kind of dampens my mood a bit. I'm kind of a sunny weather guy. You know, I like to, you know, time my moods based on, you know, how good the weather is. Although probably just like you, I do love reading on a rainy day. You know, that's fun. Yeah. I like catching up with my comics. And there's been lots of good stuff this week, Billy. But we're going to get to that in our Shop Talk segment and recommendations of Ragador. First up, though, it's our main segment. Can you tell the listeners what are we covering today on Into the Weird?
We are covering Doctor Strange number 2. If you recall, our faithful listeners, last time was Doctor Strange number 1. And, you know, we had a blast with that. Because he was getting his own series and, you know, it was spinning out of Marvel Premiere, but it was a ton of fun because it is still the awesome creative team of Steve Englehart and Frank Brunner. So always kudos to those two guys and always looking forward to talking about anything they collaborate on.
Yeah, that's right. Again, this is, you know, kind of like a hit the ball out of the park issue art-wise and writing-wise as well, even though if you really think about it, not a lot happens in terms of character development. You know, it's not that kind of comic. This is just putting Strange through his paces and going the opposite route to, let's say, someone like Ditko, where, you know, Strange was exploring other dimensions, magical dimensions. Here it's a more kind of internal exploration of the psyche or the soul, if you believe in something like that, which is happening here, which shows that Doctor Strange, you know, there's not just the physical dimension to his magic, right, Billy? There's also this mental, you know, dimension of the psyche, this mystical psyche, which can be explored internally. You know, and in this case, he's doing it through the Orb of Agamotto. But just to give the listeners a quick recap, last time around, Doctor Strange number one, probably the best, like you and I have discussed, our favorite number one issue of a run or of a title ever. Doctor Strange was immediately put at death's door by this new antagonist introduced by Brunner and Engelhardt, a Silver Dagger. And Silver Dagger had basically broken into the, ingeniously, you know, not like too easily like was done in the past, but ingeniously broken into the fortress, you know, Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum, his fortress of magical solitude, if I can steal some DC terminology there. And he had abducted Clea, but not before knifing Doctor Strange in the back. You know, with he didn't stab him. It was an awesome magical knife throw, you know, from this Silver Dagger where he gets his name from. And Doctor Strange was left for dead. Obviously, Clea had then been taken by Silver Dagger for some magical waterboarding or some brainwashing.
Creepy purposes.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. There's definitely some, you know, hints from Brunner and Engelhardt as to what he's truly, you know, looking for out of Clea. So this guy's a obsessed, you know, a magician himself, but he's a sort of a religious nutbag because he believes that there is this, you know, magic is unnatural. And he's only employing it to defeat these servants of darkness, the Sorcerer Supreme, Doctor Strange being chief among them. And because of this extreme religious views, which is sort of tied in with Christianity a bit there, right, Billy? I mean, he references God in many points in his philosophy, and he believes that he's on a divine mission, even though he's not a Christian, but he definitely believes in the Judeo, you know, Christian God. So that's the reason why he's taking out these sorcerers.
When we get to issue 5, they dive all the way into his background. That'll be a fun one for you and I to talk about. He's a wingnut. You know, he's basically one of these people that started out as just like, you know, kind of any Tom, Dick, or Harry, like super religious kind of guy, but then went off the deep end, and now he kind of has like amalgamated like his fanatical beliefs and magic and, you know, put it all together in a mixing bowl and turned out to be a complete lunatic. So
that's right.
He's a good character. And like we said, it's a really good juxtaposition from the, you know, cosmic threats, huge cosmic threats. We've talked about this before. Marvel does this really well. You know, they'll have a huge cosmic earth shattering threat, you know, the big, huge story, and then they'll shrink it down and then have another story that's very powerful in its own right, but more of an earthbound, dilemma.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's not the danger level is not lessened by that, like you say, Billy. This is right up there, because where creatures like Dormammu and Shuma-Gorath and Nightmare might not have, you know, brought Strange to the brink of death, Silver Dagger has succeeded in that. You know, so definitely, you know, on the same level as those guys, but this is nowhere near, this doesn't entail Strange sort of saving the world. Like you say, this is him having to save himself and the woman he loves. So that sort of changes the stakes a little, but, you know, since we've already fallen in love with this character because of the excellent Marvel premiere run, and obviously before that too, but, you know, for you and me, that's where it all started. We are so invested with these characters. We're so tied to their fates at this point in time. We don't want anything to happen to them. And this is the most, you know, cognitive dissonance-inducing event that could have happened up to this point. Because, I mean, obviously we were tied to the Ancient One in terms of he's part of Doctor Strange's lore. So when Strange had to kill him in Marvel Premiere to get rid of Shuma-Gorath, that was pretty upsetting as well. But here it's Strange. I mean, heretofore he was, or up to this point, he was invulnerable, right, Billy, to most, mm-hmm. you know, even to the Big Bang, you know. but now he's proven mortal, you know. And that's why we're so invested in what's going to happen now and these issues. Obviously, we know he's not going to die. I mean, this is Doctor Strange, the title. But we're afraid somehow, at least I was the first time I read this issue, of a change to the status quo, which was might be the death of Clea. It might be some other event that was, you know, hinted at to prove earth-shattering by Brunner and Englehart. You know, they were definitely, like, dropping all these little tidbits, these trail of breadcrumbs for us to follow to this conclusion that there's going to be some major changes in the title. So, yeah. You know, that's why we're fraught and we're worried. That's why we're on the edge of our seat when we read these issues. But, you know, mm-hmm. to give the listeners some specs here, Billy, this is Doctor Strange number 2, as you mentioned, cover dated August 1974, on sale May the 14th of 1974. Cover price 25 cents, page count 32. And then editor was Roy Thomas. Cover artist Frank Brunner, and I assume that includes, he did his own inks and colors again this time around. Mm-hmm. But the story proper... Titled,
and then your boy. Yeah. Don't forget your boy on letters there.
Gaspar Saladino. I love that name. I love that name, man. Gaspar Saladino. Wow, what a name, dude. Did he pick that name? Or was it his actual name that his parents gave him? Probably the latter, but yeah, I don't know, man. That's an awesome name. And then, you know, the other day I encountered another inker, just as a quick aside, on, you know, the Conan the Barbarian title, Noli Zamora. You know, and I was like, hey, man, Zamora, that's like the city, you know, in the Hyborian age, too. And this inker, Noli Zamora, what the hell? Did they pick the name or was this just happenstance? We'll talk more about that when we do another Hyborian, you know, Radio Free Hyboria episode. Anyway, so again, our creative team on this, writer Steve Englehart, the master, penciler Frank Brunner, a god. Inker Dick Giordano, a legend, and letterer John Constanza. What can I say about John Constanza? He's ever present, right, in comics lettering, at least in this era. And if do want to read this, you can find this issue in the Doctor Strange Silver Dagger number 1 special from 1983. Also in the recent Doctor Strange A Separate Reality paperback, the Epic Collection. Well, it's kind of like an Epic Collection. It's not really... formerly known as an Epic Collection, right, Billy? But it's printed at the same time in the same format with the same paper quality. And then you and I think, read it way back when in the Essential Doctor Strange, number 3, volume 3.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a long time before I found this issue, you know, and back issue-wise, I think I only picked this one up in, you know, the early 2000s, whereas, you know, the number 1 issue I'd had since the 80s. So, yeah, this was a revelation for me when I first read it in... you know, the essential format way back when, and I got the full story then soon after. So, Billy, first off, what's your history with this particular issue? Have you had it, did you first read it in the essentials as well, or?
Yeah, I definitely read it in the essentials first, and then I picked up a single copy probably either late 90s or early 2000s, and even by that time, it was... a little more expensive of an issue. You know, you figure it's number 2, and then, you know, the cover's pretty awesome too, which we'll talk about in a bit. But my copy, I would love to upgrade because it's a little bit beat up, but I do love this one. But yeah, this is one of my favorites because you know how Marvel does the bait and switch with the cover sometimes. Well, this one actually, it sort of does in a roundabout way. You know, the cover does, what happens on the cover does happen in the comic. So that's probably another reason why I really like it a lot.
Yeah, we'll get into that, man. That's a good one, because normally we know at this era of Marvel that's not what happens. The covers don't always tell the story that or reflects what's happening in the story, but this time it's different. All right, yeah. So Billy, I'm going to get into synopsis, and then we can you know, hit the highlights like the cover and the art and the story. All right, our story starts with Silver Dagger menacing Clea by decapitating a Doctor Strange mannequin. He then proceeds to browbeat her and disparages Steven in a half-hearted attempt at brainwashing. Using the Eye of Agamotto, recently acquired from Steven's Sanctum, he discerns that Doctor Strange is still alive but trapped in the Orb of Agamotto, which is tantamount to a death sentence. He uses this nugget of information on Clea further traumatizing her already wounded heart. We then cut to Doctor Strange zooming through the vast interior of the orb, searching for its center. While meditating, Stephen is attacked by a soul stealer, a hideous flying dragon slug creature, but he manages to defeat the beast with the assistance of none other than the Silver Surfer. Hey, what's he doing in the orb, right, Billy? Stephen, who has been shunted into his astral form during the battle with the Soul Eater, finds that his body has wandered off to a nearby castle, and the Surfer confirms that this is the home of someone he calls the Queen. Stephen and the Surfer enter the castle and finds an assortment of familiar superheroes having a drunken tea party, apparently entertaining Stephen's body. After re-entering his mortal shell, the Queen then appears, and she turns out to be none other than Stephen's Defenders teammate, Valkyrie. Excusing himself, Stephen is abruptly attacked by the tea-guzzling heroes, but they are easily overcome with a sorcerous blast, courtesy of the Sorcerer Supreme. Valkyrie and the Surfer, however, appear and promise that they mean Stephen no harm, and after a brief consultation, Stephen realizes that death lies at the center of the orb, and he must venture there to confront it. Valkyrie lends him her winged horse, who knows the way, and Stephen sets off to meet his fate. Our tale ends with Silver Dagger getting ready to start his sinister rehabilitation therapy on a distraught Clea. Alright, so that's basically the gist of this issue, listener. So Billy, crazy stuff happening, right, man?
Oh yeah.
But before we get to the crazy stuff that we just mentioned, we're going to talk about the cover. Okay, Billy, what do you think about this cover, man?
This cover is awesome. I mean, for anybody that hasn't seen it, definitely look it up and definitely get this issue anyway. But definitely look it up online. I mean, it is like, it's like a black background, almost looks like a night sky with the moon in the background.
Yeah.
And you have Doctor Strange that looks like a giant, like Godzilla sized. And the original three other defenders are attacking him. You know, Hulk, Namor, and Silver Surfer are attacking him. And again, you look at this and you're thinking, there's no way this happens in this comic. But it really does. I mean, there's some technicalities here, but it really does happen. So I was like, yes, it really happened. So I love this cover. It is definitely one of my all-time favorite Doctor Strange covers.
Yeah, it's a great cover. Look at Stephen, man. He looks as if the defenders are the good guys. This is the cover now. And he's the bad guy. He's the evil sorceress, you know, villain trying to take over the galaxy, and the defenders have to stop him. That's basically what this cover looks like. So
yeah, I like the fact that he has no pupils on the cover. And in that very first scene that you described, you know, the first splash page with the credits and everything, where Silver Dagger is lopping off the head of the mannequin. Of course, at first you don't know it's just a mannequin, and you see Silver Dagger approaching, and Steven's eyes, or the mannequin's eyes, have no pupils either.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is damn cool. And if you see Silver Dagger lopping off the head, he's also got the pupilless eyes, which is adding to the sinister effect, even though there's no reason for that. I mean, he's just a man, really. But great cover, Billy. I think we can, you know, there's not a lot more to say about this. Great colors, great inking, possibly all done by Brunner, like I mentioned before.
Yeah.
And, you know, being Steven's teammates attacking him, that makes it even more compelling. Like, let's say a Defenders fan, you know, in the early 70s would definitely have snapped up this issue, even though they might not have been reading Doctor Strange, just because of the fact that it's Doctor Strange versus the Defenders. And we're not disappointed. That's what's going to happen. I didn't mention that in my synopsis. I briefly glossed over it, but it's going to be Steven versus the Defenders and more. So it's going to be pretty incredible. And then, Billy, the first opening page features the title of the story, which is A Separate Reality, where that could be the title of this entire story arc, in fact, because Steven is trapped in this separate reality inside the Orb of Agamotto, which could be either inside his own mind, or it could be, you know, a reflection of a world created by his mind. We're not quite sure, you know, it's never explicitly mentioned, although we can come to our own conclusions what it basically is. But to understand it simply is, it's the interior of the Orb of Agamotto, but it's also the realm between life and death. So it's a kind of a limbo dimension. Yeah. And it is aptly titled A Separate Reality, which is also the name of the trade paperback we mentioned, the recent one where you can pick up the storyline in. So Silver Dagger approaches this, what appears to be at first Stephen Strange, and then slices off his head. And even the Cloak of Levitation isn't spared that blow, right, Billy? I mean, it's torn right to shreds, and Stephen's head goes flying. And Silver Dagger, you know, he punctuates his point by saying, Doctor Strange is dead when he does that.
Yeah, he's really trying to emotionally and, you know, mentally torture Clea here.
Yeah, and it works because in the very next page, right, Billy, the severed head, you know, bounces towards Clea, who's still chained to this wall, as we've seen in the previous issue. Thunk, 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 and then it rolls right in front of her, and she says, "You don't frighten me, Silver Dagger." But, you know, looking at that head of Steven, she looks incredibly frightened. I mean, just her face, the way Brunner draws her expression.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, of course, this is all part of his mind games that he's playing on Clea. He wants to, you know, further confuse her and further put her in a state where she's more susceptible to his philosophy. So this is like some brainwashing techniques that, I mean, I don't know anything about brainwashing, but this looks like, you know, it might work because Clea is definitely disturbed by all of this, you know, even though she says she's not. And then, you know, we've got some great panels of Brunner drawing Clea's face as she, you know, banters or argues with Silver Dagger here. And there's the scene where she cries, right, Billy? And that is a really great bit of art from Brunner. Just a single panel of one of her eyes, yeah, with these tears running out of it.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, man. And then, you know, Silver Dagger keeps screaming at her, you know, every time Clea retaliates with some logic, he says, "He was a demon, girl. Strange was a demon. You know, I murdered him in cold blood, and that's fine because he's a demon." So, you know, I like the fact that he calls Doctor Strange's, you know, mystical, you know, endeavors and philosophy the Black Faith, right, Billy? That's at one point in time. He mentions that, you know, he wants to free her from the Black Faith of Doctor Strange. And then he does, in fact, mention a little bit of what we spoke about before. He ends that by, on the next page, saying that you should be cleansed and reborn in a fundamental religion. Which, I mean, that smacks of, you know, current events as well, but also, you know, his view of the world, which is there's only one true faith, and anybody else who's not going to join that, you know, needs to be killed or cleansed, in his words. And then we get to see a little bit of his headquarters, right? His villainous lair, right, Billy? He's also got, like, a lot of mystical stuff. I mean, for a guy who believes in the Lord God, he's got a lot of satanic paraphernalia here. He's got a goat's head, a couple of goat's heads. This satanic looking candle, you know, all melted and then he's got this perfect little spot reserved for his newest acquisition, the Orb of Agamotto. The Eye of Agamotto. Mm-hmm. And then he even goes on to say that, you know, there's no way that Doctor Strange or anyone would ever triumph against him because he has too much power. So, Billy, what does he do then, man? As he sits and broods on his throne, which is, like, decorated with skulls. Yeah, he's got a throne. He holds the orb, and what does he do then?
Yeah, he uses his power to kind of peek into it, and then he says, I love his dialogue. He's every good villain has a throne, like you said, and then he always has some good dialogue too, and he says to himself, "For now, however, I must content myself with that what diversions I may devise. I wonder what's been done with Strange's corpse, and the all-seeing eye can tell me." So he wants to know what happened to his corpse. That's kind of like creepy. I don't understand. But then he sees, like you said, he's not dead, and he's just flipping out. He's alive. And he goes, "In the name of God, how?"
Yeah. And then we
switch to Steven, you know, talking to himself and thinking about his experience with the caterpillar and the puffing and all that stuff. And like I said, he's just kind of, you know, in the middle of somewhere in the orb in this land between life and death, limbo itself, and meditating. And as he's doing that, something creeps up behind him, this really creepy looking flying, like I said, a slugger with these bat wings. I don't know. And it starts to suck at his mind.
Yeah. Because, I mean, and listeners,
pulls his soul or astral form.
Yeah, you have to remember that Stephen physically went into the Orb of Agamotto. He was sucked in because he was at death's door, and because he tried to heal himself, you know, he wasn't able to defend himself against the powers of the orb, which demanded a price for, you know, for using basically two spells at the same time, one to find out where Clea had gone and the other to heal himself. And because of that, you know, the orb sucked him in. He was powerless to defend himself against its might, right, Billy? And that's, so his physical form is in the orb. And then, you know, this slug-like dragon thing, you know, the soul eater, sucks his soul out. And that's his astral form, which I guess is one and the same. And then he still manages to wield his magics in astral form, which he's done many times in the past. And but they prove sort of ineffective because he is sucked in. And just before he's completely sucked in, the Silver Surfer shows up and sort of blasts the soul eater, right, Billy? But it's too late. I mean, he wasn't really able to help Stephen, even though I mentioned that in the synopsis. Not against the Soul Eater, because what does Stephen do? Once he's inside the Soul Eater, trapped inside, he sees some pretty horrific images, right, Billy? Straight out of...
Oh, my God.
What does he see?
Oh, my gosh. He sees all the souls of these people that the Soul Eater has eaten their souls. And he blasts off with our favorite line, "By the hoary host of Hoggoth, whatever that silver flash was, it pales beside this vision of agony. Heads, 10, 20 of them." And you see all these people's heads on the inside of this soul eater that looks like, it almost looks like a Swamp Thing image, you know, where you have all these.
I was going to say the same. Yeah, like John Todelman and Steve Bissett. Gosh. This is where they got it from. They were heavily inspired by Brunner, I think, in these early 70s issues.
This is disturbing. And he's like, they're writhing, gibbering. And one of them looks at him, and it's really creepy, and it says, "Screaming for our souls, upon which the fiend forever feasts, phantom." It's strange. "I am no phantom. My astral form exists with or without my mortal trappings."
Yeah, exactly. And you know that soul that's talking to him, right? That head that's basically peeking out of the creature's stomach lining, right, Billy? It's got those, what I like to call Sal Buscema spittle lines in the interior of his mouth. But they're red, right? They're red and like
disturbing.
Bloody. And then, you know, it definitely looks like the entire stomach of this soul eater is lined with faces and heads. You know, and basically it's an eternal torture from them, because they do say that their souls are still eternal, but they're eternally feasted on, you know, by this creature and his, you know, ethereal stomach acid. So it's horrible. But then Stephen, this is another reason why I love Doctor Strange so much. I've mentioned this before, Billy. He is pretty damn smart when it comes to it. Like he realizes he can't escape this creature. So not in the conventional way. So what does he do? He enters its brain, and then he disrupts its neurons, and it's, you know, through his psychic projection, he basically he messes up this thing's central nervous system, because after all, he's a doctor, right? He was a neurosurgeon. And then he, you know, he messes with this thing's mind, and then basically he says, in layman's terms, it'll freak out.
I don't know if it's like he almost causes it to have like a seizure or something, or a stroke or something, but he basically makes it crash and into like a, not a planet, but I don't know what you'd call it, but he basically KOs it enough to jump out of its mouth.
Exactly.
And the Silver Surfer's there.
An admiring Silver Surfer looks on, you know, he's very impressed by this phantom, this ethereal phantom defeating this Soul Eater. Because as it turns out, this Silver Surfer has no knowledge of who Stephen is. He doesn't know he's, you know, friends with Stephen, that he met him before. So that already hints to the fact that this is not the real Silver Surfer. This is just basically a projection of the orb taken from Stephen's mind. Right, Billy, and made real. So this Silver Surfer is, in fact, real.
There's going to be a few more of those.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of them later on. Right now, Billy? We're going to talk about that right now. Because it seems that Stephen has freed these souls, right, Billy? So presumably, listen to this is what I'm thinking. Presumably, these are folks that handled the Orb of Agamotto in the past. Because as we know, this orb has existed for millennia, right, Billy? Stephen's only had it for like a decade or less. You know, so point being that these might have been previous sorcerers, magicians, I don't know, folks who were just captured by the orb or unwittingly drawn in. Or they might be, you know, the orb is linked to the greater limbo. We don't know, but they've been eaten by the Soul Eater for millennia. And now Stephen has set them free. So he's the first person to ever defeat the Soul Eater, and he's just saved thousands of souls. And then, you know, the Silver Surfer says he'll help him out, even though he doesn't know him from, you know, from Adam. So he's still going to lead him to this castle, which this castle that the Silver Surfer leads him to looks a lot like Castle Grayskull, you know, from the Masters of the Universe. And this is like, what, 8 years before Castle Grayskull was even invented by the guys over at Mattel, right, Billy? So they might have also got it from this, because damn, this thing looks like Castle Grayskull.
It does. It almost reminds me, like, if you took the skull away, which is the, you know, just like you said, just like Castle Grayskull, the skull, mouth, and head is like the opening for it. If you take that skull away, though, it almost reminds me of like a P. Craig Russell kind of drawing.
This is one
of his like fantasies drawings or something.
You're right. This is something Russell drew quite often. Yeah, you're right. Especially, you know, you're right. No, I've seen him draw this before. His Elric stuff. You know, I can't...
Killraven or something.
Killraven, yeah. We're going to have to look up those ones, Billy. But yeah, he's good at drawing skull-like structures in mountains, in caves, in castles as well, yeah. So then, you know, Stephen again lets loose with one of his, you know, sayings. Vipers of Valtor, is everything here designed to confound me? Because what do we see? Billy, big splash page. What does Stephen see when he enters the hall of this castle?
This might be my favorite double page splash ever. He walks into this like banquet hall, and you see all these heroes sitting here at a table. Some of them drinking tea, but some of them look like they're drunk. So I don't know what's in their tea. But you see, you see the Hulk, Doctor Strange's body just sitting there inert. You see Submariner, Spider-Man, Hawkeye, Black Panther, Nick Fury, Ant-Man, and then a couple of questionable other people here. Well, one of them's probably a public domain character, so that's why they snuck him in there. So, okay, let's say they were okay sending in a Fawcett hero, you know, Fawcett from Captain Marvel days, Captain Midnight, and it took me a while to figure out who that guy was. And then all of a sudden you look and there's somebody falling down drunk from the table, and it looks like it's I would assume Hal Jordan.
Yes, yes, dude, that is Green Lantern, man. Look at the hand, the ring. It's got the white glove that Hal Jordan sported in the 60s and 70s. That's him, man, but it's him. And then Hawkeye looks down at him because he's passed out from the drink, and Hawkeye looks down at his inert form and says, "Panty waist."
But y'all, this is incredible. I mean, you have Spider-Man saying, "Hey, two-piece, I think the captain's sliding under the blasted table again. Give me a fin with him, will you?"
And he's using his webbing, right, to keep Captain Midnight propped up
from falling down. And Namor responds with, "And wrinkle my outfit, Spider-Man? Never."
And man, don't forget the tea gator, if you could call him like that. I mean, if you think about the tea party, this is the tea gatekeeping party over here, right, Billy? Because Hulk is the tea gator. He's like obsessed with getting everybody to drink his brand of tea, his tea that he brews. And then Hulk says, "Stranger won't talk, fish man. Won't drink Hulk's tea either. Hulk will smash his head."
And then you have this poor, like, I don't know, I guess like a little person who is serving the tea, and you have Nick Fury for some reason pointing his gun at the guy's face.
Yeah.
And says, "Move it, you yellow brick and gold bellied bearded weirdo." I'm thinking, what did he do?
Oh my God. And there's like the skull again, you know, presumably on this kind of a dais with this
like
skull,
dais, yeah.
Like a dais. And then this, you've got this guard with this half moon like axe and the shield guarding this dais. And he's looking on to this tea party, probably with enjoyment, because this thing's crazy. Now, Billy, this ties in again to the Alice in Wonderland, you know, theme that's been playing throughout these last two issues. You know, the caterpillar in the first issue. Now we've got the Mad Hatter and the March Hare, you know, at this mad tea party that Alice came upon in Lewis Carroll's novel. So, you know, this is the mad tea party, but the Marvel version of the mad tea party inside Doctor Strange's brain. And like you
I
say,
love Strange's words too. Strange's words are great. In the name of the Eternal Vishanti, there sits my body in the middle of madness.
And this is madness, man, because Black Panther passed out drunk. When have you ever seen that? This is probably the only time ever in any comic that Black Panther is passed out drunk. Little Ant-Man sitting there on the table having imbibe this giant-sized cup of tea. Well,
he's done.
Yeah, he's done, man. He's completely, you know, inebriated. Hawkeye, you know, he's you know, disparaging Hal Jordan for not being able to handle his liquor, but Hawkeye himself is pouring the tea out onto the table.
He's filling it like a drunk, because he doesn't realize he's tipping it over.
Oh, damn, man. Now, one thing, Billy, I forgot to mention was, you know, I did mention this in the synopsis. Strange, he needed to the help of the Surfer, because while Strange was fighting, you know, the Soul Eater in his astral form, his body had wandered off. And normally when Steven does leave his body, it stays inert. You know, it stays, you know, in the same spot as it was when he, you know, made his astral form appear. So the fact that the body wandered off, that already says, you know, there's something weird going on here for Steven. He has less control in this realm than he might have, you know. But, you know, even though his magics might not be completely 100% conforming to his version of reality, right, Billy, he's still incredibly powerful, because what happens in the next panel, as he rejoins his body, he pisses off the Hulk.
The Hulk is like, he basically has the attitude of, if you don't want to hang out with me and drink my tea, I will kill you.
Yeah, that's his that's his excuse. And Steven's very polite about it too. He says, I apologize for being a bore, but and I intruded on your tea party, but I bid you farewell. And then that upsets the Hulk, especially after the Queen arrives and she turns out to be Brunhilde, you know, the Valkyrie. And then the Hulk is the first one to introduce Steven to their queen, right? But Steven again excuses himself. After a brief, I don't know, Billy, did you also catch this? After briefly, you know, sort of getting the hots for Valkyrie, Steven says...
Yeah, the two of them are kind of looking at each other a little oddly.
He says, truly, Steven is now thinking, this is a thought bubble. He says, truly, this world is a wonderland. You know, what that caterpillar said, and this is as he's gazing at Valkyrie's face, unreality ain't too bad.
But, and then Clea... a visage pops into his mind of Clea, and he's like, but it won't help me rescue Clea.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
Thanks, everybody.
It's almost like the memory of Clea sort of cock-blocked him there for a moment. So as Steven's libido was interrupted there by, you know, Clea, he leaves, and then the Hulk says, stupid stranger. First, he insults Hulk, now the queen. Let's kill him!
Yeah, and they like try to rush him. And he just turns around and his eyes like burst with this energy, and it kind of like knocks all of them down. The Hulk, you know, he's even pretty tough in this one. So he thinks he's going to just jump up and smash the Doc, and the Doc just, you know, they're no match for him. So he really takes them to town here. And then they really start ganging up on him again. And he just says, I am Sorcerer Supreme. Blom.
Yeah.
So we've seen that sound effect before, and he knocks them right through the wall of the castle.
Great sequence of action panels. Like, I love that part. You know, it shows you how powerful Steven is. Basically, first off,
he kills them.
Yeah, it looks like he does, because he's realized that they don't, well, the Silver Surfer mentioned that they don't have souls, you know, so they're not technically alive. They're just projections, you know, created by the the Orb of Agamotto. So what he does first is he casts a spell to disorient them, you know, some kind of like a vertigo type spell. But then the Hulk survives the spell and he proceeds to pound Steven into the ground. But then it turns out Steven tricked him by creating one of the images of Icon, right, Billy? I mean, he says it's a replica, but it's what he sometimes uses, the images of Icon, which we saw so brilliantly in the Avengers Infinity War movie when he fought Thanos, right, with the images of Icon that he created. That's a great scene. So then, you know, as the Hulk beats up this image, Steven is behind him and he laughs at them, and then they come at him again, and this time he's not holding back. Like you say, they show this one panel, Brunner does, of the castle window and Steven's shout coming out of it saying, "I'm the Sorcerer Supreme!" And then you have this rumbling sound effect, and suddenly there's this explosion, almost like a volcanic eruption. And these drunken heroes just go flying out of the castle. And they're...
Even Black Panther woke up to get blasted out the window.
Exactly. Oh, man, that's great. And then, you know, Steven, as he gazes on this massacre that he's just perpetrated, he sees this Soul Eater again, you know, which apparently was not killed by his crash landing earlier. The Soul Eater shows up. But then Valkyrie, the Queen, and Silver Surfer shows up, and Steven's about to blast them too when they say, "No, we're not your enemies. We just want to, you know, help you." And then they reveal to Stephen Strange the truth, which he suspected all along, is that death lies at the heart of the orb. And you can't escape the orb by trying to escape death. You have to confront death, right, Billy? You have to almost embrace it. And then... So it's sort of like your destiny, your ultimate fate. So even though this might mean Steven's death, because right now he's half alive, right?
Right.
So he doesn't know, though, how to go to the center of the orb. But, you know, Valkyrie says she does, and she will lend Steven her steed so that the steed will take him there. And then, you know, Steven flies off into this, you know, this light, which is very reminiscent of what some people describe when they die, right, Billy? Going into the light.
Yeah,
on this flying horse. And then this is a brilliant sequence of panels too, where as Steven flies into the light turns out to be a hazy image of the face of Silver Dagger, and the mists swirl and become Clea's head, her white hair. And then it turns out that all of these events have been observed by Silver Dagger, presumably, you know, through the Eye of Agamotto, which he, you know, stole from Steven, and now he's using this new knowledge to further upset Clea, right, Billy, by saying that Strange is now trapped in the Orb of Agamotto, possibly forever, because it's the same as being dead, and no one's ever escaped it, and now that he doesn't have Doctor Strange to worry about anymore, he can devote 100% of his time and effort to Clea.
Yeah, he starts weeping. It's really a sad panel.
She starts weeping, and you've got that great little starry effect drawn by Brunner that I so love in her hair, right, Billy? This little twinkling effect. And then you see this last panel of Clea just crying, just, you know, she's now being convinced by Silver Dagger that there's no hope for Steven. And then next issue, face to skull with death. Wow, dude, this issue was great. Again, another winner.
Oh yeah.
Loved it. I can reread this thing endlessly again. So, Billy, final thoughts. How do you rank this issue?
Oh, it's awesome. I love it. I mean, it's right up there with the first issue. Maybe not quite as powerful because it was, you know, not the first issue in his, you know, own series, but it's close. It's right up there.
Yeah.
You can't not say this wasn't an awesome issue. I mean, it's, you know, I'll talk about one tiny little thing in Mighty Marvel missteps that bother me a little, but other than that, it's fantastic. It's a great issue.
Love it. I'm the same. I, you know, we on this show we don't give rankings out of 5 or 10 or, you know, whatever, but this is a 11 out of a 10 for me if I had to rank it, because but you know, like I say, it's hard to quantify my likes and dislikes and what my favorites are, because, you know, I ranked the previous one very highly too. So yeah, I'm gonna have to give it to the first issue as my favorite, but this one is very close, very extremely close. They might even be neck and neck for me, you know, Billy, because the mad tea party alone, and the way he takes out the Soul Eater and the interior of the Soul Eater's, you know, organs and stomach, and the way it's drawn, is just crazy, man. How did they come up with this? They must, like we say, they must have been on some serious weapons grade, you know, recreational drugs here, because this is the only way I think you can generate these images and these ideas. Yeah. So we'll get to that, you know, when we appraise this issue more in our Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Missteps right after this break, listeners. So stay with us. Don't go away.
Where the hell are we?
Dan Cook River.
Yes, sir? How do you know that? How are you sure?
Only one way to find out, dude. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm not feeling so good right now. Seriously, my skin hurts.
Nuts from the peanut gallery. Into the water, ladies.
No, man. Let me take a look at that map right quick.
Why is everybody all obsessed with the map?
Because we're tired of being your trail donkeys, acting like you some one-man GPS. God damn it! We lost! We fucking super lost, man! Tell them, McCluskey. Tell them what time it is.
I don't believe you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Huh?
I think what Tug means is you people,
look
you
his
actors,
ass, man.
You people.
Exactly. Look at that, BD. What are you talking
about? I gotta get back to the actors.
Chill, all right? Just chill it.
Okay, we're back with Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Missteps. Billy, what did you have this week for Bronze Age Brilliance?
I mean, I don't know how you could read this issue and the brilliant part not be that tea party. I mean, that is the best part. That is one of the like most funny, interesting, crazy. It's got to be the craziest thing up until now in the history of Doctor Strange. I'm not going to say it is forever, but from when it started in Strange Tales up until this issue, this is the wildest, craziest scene ever, but it's just so much fun. And the fact that they threw in, you know, a DC character, a Fawcett character, that's just, the icing on the cake for me with this issue. That's hands down.
Yeah, man. And, you know, the fact that even, I mean, I don't know, they're still in line with the Alice in Wonderland thing, but they've changed it so significantly by this time, right, Billy, that it's become its own thing. I wasn't expecting it, though. I thought, you know, when I first read it, I already knew that, you know, the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland, because I think I had seen the movie, that Disney movie, before I had read the issue, you know, as a kid.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But, you know, I didn't expect them to throw the Mad Tea Party in there. And they did. And the fact that it featured Marvel heroes, just the icing on the cake. So I'm going to have to go with you. Just that tea party scene, that double page splash alone, that's my Bronze Age Brilliance. But the rest of the comic's great as well, especially that fight with the Soul Eater. And another clever way for Steven to take out an enemy by flying into his brain in his astral form and disrupting its neurons. It's great. It's brilliant. Something a surgeon would do, but a surgeon with insane magical powers. So, you know, that is also my Bronze Age Brilliance. How about your Mighty Marvel Missteps?
So for me, there's only one thing, and it's just like a little nitpicky. It's not a big deal or anything like that, but I thought, I mean, when you read the issue overall, you know, and you just read it front to back, everything seems to make sense and everything seems to flow pretty good. But then when I sit here and read it a couple of times in a row and try to look for something, I feel like, you know, it's a very, like, I don't know if chaotic's the word, but there's a lot going on in this issue. You know what I mean? Between, you know, the whole death and the dimension and the Soul Eater and the Surfer and the Tea Party and all that stuff. There's a lot going on in just this one issue here, like a lot. I feel like they could have almost split this into two issues if they yeah. really, you know, if Brunner was a little bit faster with his pencils, this could have been two and three.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one thing that's okay, this kind of ties into your misstep here, but not really. But see if you can make the connection, right, Billy, here. My misstep is the fact that it's never, because of all this chaos, it's never clearly explained how Steven knows the way to the center of the orb, because they mentioned that Valkyrie knows the way, but since she is just a projection created by the Orb of Akamoto of something in Steven's mind, you know, a part of his mind, that means he always knew the direction to the orb. So it could be that he doesn't want to accept his own death, and now that he's finally accepting the fact that he might die, that means his path to the center of the orb is clear. But it's not stated. It's kind of like left up for grabs there. You kind of have to make your own come to your own conclusion. But it's not really clear. So I was very confused to that. It almost looks like an easy cop-out by Steve Englehart to say, okay, this is how he eventually gets to the orb. You know, it's just like he's always known. You know, he just had to accept the fact that he knows that he, you know, has this knowledge. So for me, that's it. It almost seems like Steve Englehart just wanted to find an easy way to explain to us, hey, now he's finally going to get to the orb, you know. So it goes from A to C without explaining the B, you know, like something like that. But, you know, that's like I said, another nitpick, another great issue, almost near flawless. All right, Billy. So that's it for our Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel missteps. I guess these ones are going to go fairly quickly during our next few episodes of discussing the Doctor Strange comic, right, Billy? Because there's not a lot of missteps on the part of Englehart and Brunner. They're almost like my favorite comic book writer artist team of all time, and even more so than the Marvel Premiere stuff they did here. It's like they've refined their approach and their, you know, collaboration, and a lot of that does have to do with the fact that now Brunner is a co-plotter as well, right, Billy? Because he's a great storyteller.
Yeah, I think so. Like he's a great visual storyteller, and then, you know, teamed up with a great writer, scripter like Steve Englehart, you know, those two guys got their heads together. It was great. You know, we could, you know, find little tiny plot holes or something like that and make more of a bigger deal about them for Mighty Marvel missteps. But if you pick up this comic and you read it cover to cover and you're in any way, shape, or form a Doctor Strange fan, you're going to have a ton of fun reading this issue. It's a blast. It's a great issue. There's like good drama, there's good humor, there's a lot of really good stuff here. So that's why it would get high marks from us.
Yeah, that's right. Now, we do have to mention to the listeners, we're not always going to be completely subjective about, you know, the content we discuss, right, Billy? Like right now, we love everything, most of the things from Doctor Strange at this point in time, but there is going to come a point in time when we go through this volume of Doctor Strange, which is technically volume 2, and we're going to encounter some issues that we don't like, that I will say there's like a 2 out of 5 or something. You know, there aren't many of them, but there's going to come a time, and then you and I might also disagree on certain issues. So we just have to sort of prepare the listeners for that, because right up until this point, it's all been, we love it. I mean, Grant and I, we did have some issues which we did not like at all when we discussed, you know, the early Doctor Strange stuff, you know. But then you and I, Billy, we got on the Marvel Premiere, and the first couple of Stephen Strange issues in Marvel Premiere was a little bit clunky, you know, the Gardner Fox written ones, the Stan Lee written one, but not a lot to criticize there, because, you know, we saw that they were pushing it into a Cthulhu kind of Lovecraftian direction, which you and I both love. Right. So we were very subjective there, too. But I just want to warn the listeners that it's not always going to be high praise for us.
No. Yeah. Down the road, I was a few weeks ago, I actually got out this entire run and sat there and just kind of like, you know, look through the covers. And then if a cover struck me, I would open it. And there are some issues that I did take a look at where, you know, the writing isn't, you know, especially strong. And there are a couple even at the artwork I was just like, oh boy, you know. But again, I was looking at the entire run, so when you're comparing other artists to Brunner or Gene Colan, you know, that's gonna happen, because not everybody was on that level.
That's right. So, you know, that being what it is, I guess the listeners are looking for something like that down the line, though, right, Billy? They don't want us to be ridiculously positive all the time, but yeah, it's gonna come though. So, you know, other than that, I also want to just briefly say that, you know, every other episode we do that does not feature Dr. Stephen Strange, that is mostly stuff that you and I pick because we love it. Our favorite comics from the Bronze Age, our favorite titles. So you're always going to get something that we would recommend you to read, you know, in those other episodes, you know. But this Stephen Strange run, of course, there's going to be some, you know, some bad, you know, issues down the line, and we're going to deal with them accordingly, right, Billy? We're not going to sugarcoat them. We're going to really, you know, pick them apart. So, you know, but, you know, right now we're still in the part of the run where we love everything and everything's great, and it's 90%, you know, genius, 10%, you know, missteps or something. So,
yeah. For real.
But, you know, Billy, because our Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Mistips were so short this week, we can just head on straight into the Shop Talk segment. I'm not even going to put a break in here because it's not necessary. We just had a break. So, you know, I have some stuff for Shop Talk this week. You don't have it because, you know, we haven't really been going to comic shops much. And you and I, we're not always on CBR or checking out recent comic book news. I mean, we're on Twitter. That's where we get most of our information from. And, you know, the big news recently has been Gina Carano and the whole Mandalorian thing. And she was fired by Disney for her views, reprehensible though they are, you know, the tweets and the likes and the retweets she did off, you know, people who were involved in the insurrection. And so obviously, you know, I do agree that, you know, I don't, this whole cancel culture thing, it's not, I mean, it's, for me, it is a big deal, but, you know, for me, it's like them reaping what they sow. You know, Billy, if you support something that's truly inhumane, you know, which is like fascism, or you support, you know, bigotry, or you support, you know, people who are denigrating, you know, people who are trans or, you know, LGBTQ community folks, if you basically support legislation that they want to take away human rights from those people, then I am against you. You know, so I do agree that Gina Carano is not a nice person. But for me, you know, I'm not going to talk about that because, you know, that you and I, we've talked about that before. Everybody knows our views on the situation. You know, we basically live and let live, right? Billy, you and I are like that. If you're weird, that's cool. Yeah. And weirdness is not, you know, a derogatory term for us. We love the weird. We love people who are different. We love everybody. You know, especially if you read comics, you know, and there's a huge, you know, community of comic book readers who are being discriminated against by folks like ComicsGate. You know, female comic creators are suffering because of hate posting by ComicsGaters. And we hate that, right, Billy? You and I, we're not supporting the ComicsGaters. We're not supporting bigots. But, you know, that's not what I'm always talking about on the show here. That's more like a get off my lawn kind of thing. I'm going to try to keep it positive, you know, but you and I do, we do tackle these negative topics sometimes, you know, when it really, you know, is close to our heart. But, you know, that's been done. That's my point. The Gina Carano thing has been discussed. I'm not going to go too much into that. But, you know, for me personally, Billy, I recently went back to my comic book store here in Taipei, and I hadn't been there for like 2 months. And I went to pick up some comics. I don't have a lot on my call order there anymore other than Immortal Hulk. But I managed to pick up one comic that I'll mention later in our recommendations of Ragador, along with a couple of graphic novels and collections. But one comic I picked up for my daughter, who's recently, you know, she's been reading lots of comics, but she doesn't like single issues. She likes to get a whole chunk of things in like a trade paperback. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I've been buying her lots of stuff. She loves stuff like the Avatar, The Last Airbender kind of comics, you know, those collections. And she loves other things too, like, you know, Scotty Young stuff, the Oz books, you know, that Scotty Young.
Oh, yeah. Those are cool.
Yeah, those are really cool. She loves those. And I've read them to her for bedtime stories and stuff like that. But, you know, she went with me to the comic book store recently, and I said she can pick a comic, and she did pick out a single issue, and it was Doctor Strange related. She picked out Strange Academy number 8. Now, I tried to convince her not to do that. I said, why didn't you start from the beginning? You know, like, why didn't you pick up issue number 1? But as it turned out, they did not have issue number 1, nor did they have the trade, you know, the collection, the volume 1 that reprints, volume I think, one. The first 5 or 6 issues. They didn't have that. So what they did have was, you know, issue 8, and then they had like issue 3 and so forth. But, you know, I told her, okay, just pick up one and see if you like the art, see if you like the characters. So she picked out this issue 8, which I knew nothing about. I just saw the cover, and the cover's just like this girl's face holding like this ring. But, you know, she had paged through it, you know, so they allow that in the comic book store, at least where here in Taipei. So she knew she liked the art, so I got it for her. And then, you know, she asked me to read it to her. And, you know, I had a blast reading it to her. You know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to pick it up as a series. I might, you know, for her, and then read it, you know, along with her. But listen to this, Billy. This is crazy, man. Strange Academy is like basically, you know, the magic users of the Marvel Universe getting together and forming this like Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters kind of, you know, place, which is run by Dr. Voodoo, and Dr. Strange has a you know, a stake in it. And then, you know, you've got these new characters that are introduced, and it's also written by Scotty Young with art by Humberto Ramos. So you get great writing, you get great art. And dude, listen, there's a character in this who's the son of Dormammu. Guess what his name is? Doyle Dormammu. Doyle. Doyle. Anyway, so it's like, you know, but he's great. He's a great character. And this whole issue, okay, he's recently died, right? In an adventure. And then he was brought back to life by this character called Emily Bright. And then he needs to go to therapy because he died and came back to life. So guess who's his therapist? Dead Girl from Ecstatics.
Oh, gosh.
She's like, because she had been dead and she came back from the dead and she dealt with it. So now she's his therapist. And, oh, man, this issue's great. I really liked it. Now, I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know a lot about the characters, but what I knew is this issue was pretty damn good. So I read it. I'm not going to, you know, have this as part of my recommendations of Ragador, but I'm saying that now that, you know, just part of my shop talk, I recently went back and I picked up a new comic book among a few others.
That's cool.
Yeah, so things at the, you know, comic book store is going great. And then I spoke to the comic book store owner and he said, "Hey man, are you excited for this Amazon Prime series Invincible?" So I'm like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, man, you know Robert Kirkman and Ryan Otley's book Invincible, which, you know, I know well. I read it. You know, I've got the entire run in trades, right, Billy? This Image Comics series, Invincible, about this kid, Mark Grayson. He's like a superhero, kind of Superman-esque character, you know, from this Vulturemite race. It's a very good comic, but very violent, very bloody, you know, Image Comics style level of violence. And then, you know, I don't know how this completely went under my radar. Amazon has an animated series dropping on March 26th of this year, which is Invincible, the entire series. And, I mean, the animation's definitely going to be great if you look at some of the stills available online. But listen to the voice cast, okay? You've got J.K. Simmons as Nolan Grayson, you know, the dad of this Mark Grayson kid. J.K. Simmons, you know, J. Jonah Jameson, right?
Jameson, yeah.
Yeah, from the Spider-Man movies. And then you've got Mark Hamill as Art, you know, the guy who creates their superhero costumes. You know, he's like an advisor to the Invincible family. Mark Hamill doing voice acting is always going to be good, right? Then you've got Zazie Beetz, you know, Domino from the Deadpool 2 movie. Zazie Beetz as Invincible's girlfriend, Amber.
Yeah.
And you've got a couple of other. You've got Walter Coggins in there. Zachary Quinto, you know, Spock as Robot. You've got, who else? Jason Mantzoukas. And then you've got, there was someone else. I forgot now. But, you know, lots of good voice actors in there.
Big names there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the crap out of this.
I'll have to check that out. Where did you say it was? Netflix
it's on
or Amazon
Prime, dropping on March 26th, the Invincible animated series. And they're not, there's no holds barred. This is like, you know, going to be very bloody. It's not just going to be for
like
kids,
an adult
right, Billy?
Show.
Yeah, I don't know what the PG rating is on this thing, but it's going to be PG-15 or more because... or higher, because this is, you know, they're going to keep the aesthetic of the comic, which is all blood and guts. I mean, when someone gets super punched in the Invincible comic, it's like brains and brain matter and skull fragments flying all over the panels. That's the level of violence. So, I mean, and it is a great comic. Usually I'm not a big Robert Kirkman mark. I respect the guy. I like it. You know, as a horror fan, I read The Walking Dead up to a point, you know, and then I became tired of it, right, Billy? But Invincible, I sort of stuck... Even though I didn't read it in issue forms, I just in floppies, I read it in trade. You know, I read it up until the very end, I think, which is like trade number 22. There's like 22 trades or something or more.
Wow,
I can't
holy
remember.
Crap.
It's been a couple of years since I read the series, but, you know, it's a very good series. Very, very. It's a homage to superhero comics of all, you know, eras. So I like it. So this is going to be something to watch and for the listeners as well. Now, this does sound like our recommendations of Ragged Or segment, right, Billy? But it's not really. But speaking of that, Billy, since you don't have anything for Shop Talk, we can head right on into your brain baby, which is the recommendations of Ragged Or. So don't go away, folks.
Once more, the Grey Dormammu has to deal with this insignificant crap of recommending books to humans who have nothing better to do than play on their phones all day and use this verdammt app called Twitter. I'm dealing with my own problems over here. Recently had an insurrection in the Dark Dimension. I had to send my sister Umar packing back to Umar-a-Lago. Oh well. Better luck next time, sis. Meanwhile, I better get going with Rags' favor over here. Listen to what Billy and Herman have to say, for it just might earn you the mercy of the Great Dormammu.
All right, Billy, what do you have, and what has Dormammu sanctioned this week on the recommendations of Ragged Or?
All right, so, you know, in a quest to accumulate in one form or another everything that my favorite artist, Gene Colan, has been involved with, in the last few years, I've been looking more at his, I have a ton of his Marvel work, so I've been looking more for his DC and, you know, other companies, and I've grabbed a few different things, but just recently I had a chance to get a graphic novel, and it's called Night Wings. It's Robert Silverberg is a, like, horror, sci-fi, you know, fantasy.
Yeah, I know him, yeah, author.
Yeah, and he had a story, and they adapted it, DC did, into a graphic novel written by Cary Bates, and the artwork is by Gene Colan, and a guy, I think he just passed away recently too, Neil McFeeters is his name. So it's kind of like, you know, Gene did the pencils, and then Neil McFeeters painted artwork over the top of Gene's pencils. And it's a really cool sci-fi story about, you know, a futuristic society, kind of almost like a half Planet of the Apes without the apes, but you know, something in a different alternate future type thing.
Yeah.
But it's really, really cool. I was glad I grabbed it. I mean, I literally got it on eBay for like, I don't know, $7 or something like that. Super, super cool story. I was really, really satisfied. I mean, it's not too long either. I don't know if it's maybe like, you know, 40 pages, 30 pages, something like that. It's not very long, but man, it was super cool, and I was glad I got it. It's got a really neat cover too by Bill Sienkiewicz. So
wow.
Definitely look that one up, yeah.
Dude, I gotta get that, because, you know, our love for Colan transcends money, price. No, not always, but you know what I mean. Yeah, Colan, dude. Oh, okay, that's a good recommendation. I love it when you recommend stuff, and you usually do, that I don't have or haven't read, right, Billy? Because I'm going to want to pick them up, and then you and I can talk about that, discuss it off mic or on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So
Thanks
for that recommendation, man.
For me,
I recently, you know, like I mentioned, walked into my comic book store here in Taipei, or in New Taipei County. It's sort of out of the city, actually. So it's quite difficult to get to. A couple of years ago on Long Box of Darkness, I mentioned there was a comic book store really near my house, right, Billy? Like walking distance, like a couple of blocks away, but they closed down, you know, like 2 years ago. So I was pretty bummed out about that. But now if I want to go to get comics, I have to go to New Taipei County, which is sort of still close to Taipei City. It's just like an hour or so commute. But, you know, worth it. I haven't gone a lot recently because of the weather that I mentioned. But, you know, since I did go last week, I picked up a ton of stuff, and most of it was marked down. I'm always worried when things are marked down, like 60% off, because it's like, oh, is this like a, you know, a closing sale that you guys have got on? but it's not. You know, they just can't easily get rid of their, you know, Western comics and material. It's difficult for them to get, you know, fans and buyers to you know, to get all their stock. So they normally order less, and then you have to sort of put it on your call order if you want it, if you know it's coming. But the stuff they did have, sometimes they have just one or two copies of a collection, and then that doesn't sell. And then I come in and then it's marked down, you know. So I picked up a couple of those. And what I did pick up is creative teams writing that you and I both love, which is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I picked up their two recent, products, if you can put it like that, their works that they've recently done. And that is Reckless Volume 1. Which is like this crime thriller. Again, they're good at crime thrillers, which is it's really good. And then I also picked up this OGN that they did called Pulp. Both of them, Billy, highly recommended. 5-star books, both crime novels or crime stories in the vein of Criminal, you know, and those kind of books that they want to do. But sometimes, you know, they do the odd horror or supernatural, or they do a superhero comic, but basically consistently they've been doing lots of crime stories. Yeah, this crime is definitely that stuff, yeah. but it has noir, but it has a different flavor this time around, you know. I would definitely recommend both of those, but the main one that I want to recommend, Billy, is, and you won't believe this, another new comic single issue that I picked up. It wasn't on my call order or anything. I didn't know it was coming because, like I say, I don't keep track of things on websites. And dude, this was Morbius, Bond of Blood, one shot by Ralph Macchio and Tom Riley on art. A new Morbius comic released in February 2021. I picked it up, Billy. It was glorious. It was amazing. I loved every panel, every page of it. It's not like this modern art style, you know, all glossy, flashy, giant panels taking up 3 pages to, you know, for one action sequence. No, this is classic Morbius, and the art is done in the old, you know, Marvel style, but with a bit of a new flair added to the colors. But he looks like Morbius. He's in his classic Morbius costume, blue and red.
Cool.
You know, and this is a great story. It's basically, I'm not going to spoil too much for people who want to pick it up, but it's Morbius versus Dr. Calvin Zabo, also known as the Marvel Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Now, Billy,
that's cool. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, man. You know him, Thor villain. You're a big Thor fan. You know, he used to partner up with Cobra and Mr. Hyde, Cobra. You know, versus Thor. But, you know, then for a while they became like Spider-Man villains. There's this great Roger Stern issue penciled by John Romita Jr. when he was still good, in my estimation.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Where Spidey versus Cobra and Mr. Hyde. Oh, man, that's one of my favorite Spider-Man issues of all time.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man. Well, so I love the character. Recently, we saw him fighting the new Ghost Rider, Jaime Reese Ghost Rider, you know, Mr. Hyde. But this is the classic Mr. Hyde. Basically, the story starts off with Morbius's friend, his son is dying of a blood disease as well, and Morbius can't cure him because he doesn't have access to a lab, and time is running out. This kid is dying, so he tracks down Dr. Calvin Zabo, who in fact does have a lab and does have everything available, and Calvin Zabo refuses to let Morbius use the lab. But he will make the cure for this kid if Morbius recovers some formulas and paperwork from the Ravencroft Sanitarium in order to allow him to create his potion again so that he can become Mr. Hyde. So Morbius sort of has to juggle, you know, his morals here a little bit. You know what I mean? But he has to decide. So he does ultimately decide to go and get the formula. So he breaks into Ravencroft in this great sequence where he just takes out all the guards and like stealthily, he even uses hypnotism on one guard, like real vampiric hypnotism. And then, you know, he escapes with the papers and then he hands it over and he's given the serum by Dr. Zabo, but you know, things don't work out and eventually he has to go back. And then there's this massive confrontation between Morbius and Mr. Hyde. And Billy, now Mr. Hyde is a Hulk level, well, not Hulk, but you know, he can take on Thor man to man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm not going to give anything away, but Morbius basically kicks his ass. But not in the way, it's not a straight one-on-one fight, but it's a great right. fight. It's a great comic. Just pick it up to all you Bronze Age fans out there, Morbius fans, and it's not really horror, you know, Billy. It's not in the vein of, let's say, Vampire Tales. This is more, not even in the vein of the Adventures into Fear Morbius. This is more like a superhero Morbius, you know, but a wonderful little story. Great writing from, you know, Ralph Macchio, who's a veteran writer, you know, we know him from the 80s. And of course, this Ken Reilly guy, man, his art's amazing. So I would say this is my recommendation, my main recommendation, other than the Brubaker and Phillips books. Pick this one up, Morbius, Bond of Blood, one shot.
All right. I think I saw that. I don't know where it was. Maybe it was on Twitter, but I think I did see that. And the cover did look pretty neat.
Yeah, maybe for a preview. Well, the cover itself, I like it because it's horror-esque. You know, it's got Morbius in a graveyard, you know, with his mouth open, fangs dripping blood, which is... Which makes you think, oh man, there's going to be some serious bloodletting in this book. But actually, it's not really like that. It's like a straightforward superhero tale, almost something that you'd expect from a Spider-Man comic, which is what Morbius is closely tied to, right, Billy? He's always going to be a Spider-Man character, a Spider-Man antagonist, villain, but also, you know, erstwhile friend. But, you know, this is the Morbius I like. This is not the goth Morbius, you know, from the 90s, the one with the tattered... you know, cloak and the weird Edward Scissorhands look. You know, this is the classic 1970s Bronze Age Morbius. And the Vampire Tales Morbius too, but, you know, this is more in the Marvel Universe proper. Pick it up, Billy. Yeah. You got to get it.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
When you get it, when you go to a store again, you know, just do yourself a favor. You're going to enjoy the crap out of this comic.
Well, I need to get bags and boards for some of my comics, so I'm going to have to hit a shop soon. So I'll definitely look for that one.
Excellent, man. I only regret that it's a one-shot, because if it wasn't, you and I would be doing a whole episode just on this series down the line. This non-series. Anyway, so, Billy, that brings us to the end of the recommendations of Ragador. Next up is our Allies of Agamotto segment. So stay tuned for that, listeners. Don't go away.
For years, the Fire and Water Podcast Network has found its joy talking about comics. From Aquaman and Firestorm to Batman and Plastic Man. From giant treasuries to pocket-sized digests. From massive miniseries events to singular one-shot adventures. From romance to horror to whatever the hell Ohamu or not is. In the last year, they've begun to carve a path through their favorite television shows, such as MASH, Cheers, and Justice League Unlimited, and there's no sign of them stopping. What medium will Fire and Water conquer next? Do you like good music? Introducing Fire and Water Records, the music anthology podcast from the Fire and Water Network. Find your joy in all new ways as members of the Fire and Water Network and their friends discuss favorite songs, albums, concerts, and artists.
Hang on, I've been doing a music show for 2 years.
Featuring Record Revolution.
Join the Brothers Daily as we catalog the essential years that shaped popular music and our own lives.
A Very Daily Christmas.
An annual celebration of our favorite holiday tracks.
Plus, all new episodes of Zoom for Sam.
The show in which I share my joy of Samantha Fox by spotlighting a single every single episode.
And Pod Dylan.
No, not Pod Dylan. We discussed this. That's staying on its own feed.
Not Pod Dylan, but everything else I said. Plus, so much more. There's even a chance David Ace Gutierrez will show up.
Which brings us back to Fastball, which is really one of the most interesting American bands in the world today. When you think about the number of side projects and solo projects associated with the band, it actually almost outdoes.
Fire and Water Records, a proud part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Okay, we're back with our Allies of Agamotto segment here, and I just played the promo for Ryan Daly's Fire and Water Records podcast, which is a great listen. I'd advise all of you weirdos to give it a go if you haven't already. You probably have. I recently had the honor to co-star with Ryan on a recent episode where we discussed the great Sam Cooke for Black History Month. So if you're of a musical mind, and who isn't, have a look at that and check that out, weird listeners. I'd appreciate that. And then give the Fire and Water Network guys your support. They've got a host of great shows. They're also on Patreon, and it's worth supporting these guys because they really work really hard to get their shows out there, and they spare no expense and time into providing the best that's out there, really. So I enjoy listening to them. I listen to them on a weekly basis, and they support us. And then I also want to give thanks to a weird listener by the name of Jim Henry. Jim has sent us in two emails. Jim's a really knowledgeable fellow. He's a language expert, and in fact, he is involved with a language site, I think, which he founded, which deals with constructed languages. So he really knows what he's talking about. He's been listening to our shows, our past shows, really, catching up. And he sent us two really, insightful emails. One was about... Both are language related. So the one was about my mention of the character Blondine way back in, I think it was episode 13, when we discussed Doctor Strange meeting up with this character during the whole Cthulhu Dormammu-esque storyline. And I had mentioned on the show that Blondine was a weird name. Like, why did Englehart choose to give that name? Or I think it was Gardner Fox at the time. Why did he choose to give that name to this character? Now, in fact, it turns out, according to Jim, that Blondine is actually, it's a French name, and it's very widely in use. So it's not actually that strange. Just because I had never heard of it, me being from South Africa, and I'd never met or heard of anyone being named Blondine, does not make it strange. So it's, you know, my comment was not completely on the money. And I thank Jim for that. And then also, Jim was kind to point out that in episode 17, our Nazi Stein episode featuring the invaders, I had mentioned that Cap used the phrase, ye gods, and then mentioned that, you know, only Thor would use something like that. That is, in fact, also incorrect. If you look at Jim's site and also at the research, you know, that Jim can point you to, ye gods is actually a very... a well-known exclamation. So it's not all that strange at all, especially probably in the 1940s as well. And, basically Jim gave us some good information there. I should think before I speak. Of course, these things, I'm very good at that, just putting my foot in my mouth. So thanks, Jim, for pointing on this in the right directions. I should look more at these exclamations, and before I say something, I should check on them, because the writers were probably more knowledgeable than me when they decided to use them in their dialogue. So Jim went on to praise the podcast. He said that he's gotten into episode 17 and he wants to thank us for introducing him to the story. He hadn't read any Invaders before, though he had encountered a retired Spitfire and Union Jack in his Captain America read-through. And then he also said that he's been enjoying our old, episodes a lot. He's trying to catch up, and I'm sure he's almost caught up by now. He's basically, check out Jim's site. He's at www.pobox.com or pobox.com, Jim Henry. So this guy, really a professor level intellect. He probably is a professor of languages. Jim, let us know about that. But thanks again, Jim, for your feedback. We like constructive feedback. And it's also something that I'll use in my everyday life, speaking to other people. I won't laugh at their names anymore or at their exclamations. So I really appreciate that, Jim. And then on Twitter, right after our December episode, we got a comment from Paul Johnson. He DM'd us on Twitter and he said, just started listening to you guys. I love the Bronze Age books, so it's great to hear other people that are into them. Keep up the good work. Thanks a lot for the show. And thank you, Paul, for sending us a message, and we appreciate the feedback. All right, Billy, well, that brings us to the end of another Into the Weird. And, I enjoyed this episode a lot. This was, again, a Doctor Strange episode. Always one for the books. Thanks, Billy, man. This was good. I know you're very busy lately, but, you know, lots of personal issues. Not problems per se, but you do have a family. I have a family, but we made time. And it was a blast, man. Thanks. So where can folks find you online if they want to stalk you or track you down?
Yeah, definitely look on Twitter. That's for sure. That's where I'm at a lot of times. Haven't been on quite as much as I usually am, but I'm still floating around there. So it's at @BillyD_Licious. So look for me there for sure. And then, you know, you can always find me floating around too with Into the Weird. I'm always that long box of darkness, and you too. I'm always like floating around with those conversations. So look for me there.
Awesome. Thanks, Billy, man. And then for me, you can find me at Dark Long Box, where I do the Long Box of Darkness with Misty Graves. We're going to be taking a small hiatus with that show, Billy. Long Box of Darkness is going to come back in April because, you know, of lots of stuff going on. But, you know, everybody's busy lately. But, you know, Long Box of Darkness has never had a set schedule. So I think the listeners won't be surprised. Yeah, but we'll be back in April with a new show, possibly featuring Charlton Horror Comics. And then... You know, Billy, you and I, we're on Twitter at Into Weird, which is the main Twitter account for the show. And listeners can always DM us there or just interact with us when we post things on, you know, the main feed. And then, of course, they can send any feedback to sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. And they can also check out our website, which is www.sinkintotheweird.com. where they can possibly see a podcast addendum post where I'll be posting lots of images from this Doctor Strange comic we discussed, as well as links to the recommendations of Ragador books that they can hopefully pick up that way. And that's basically it, listeners. Thanks again for joining us for another Into the Weird. Small message for you guys. Stay safe during this blizzard up north there in North America and Canada and the entire Northern Hemisphere, and folks in the rest of the world, you know, let's support you guys, you know, by sending good vibes your way. And I hope that we all get through this. But other than that, you know, weird is cool, as it always is. We love all you weirdos out there. Thanks for tuning in and subscribing and listening to Into the Weird. So with that, it's bye from me.
All right, stay weird, everybody.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
I'm Thursday.